Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. My guest this morning is Joe Murfin, and he has one of those what I would consider dream jobs. He's been associated with Daisy for years and is now the curator of the Daisy Museum in Rogers, Arkansas. Good morning, Joe. How are you doing?
Good morning, Rick. That's what happens to old guys. They end up in museums.
Well, God bless you, sir. You did well.
Good to talk to you.
I know that first time I met you was like at a Outdoor Writers Association conference thing, and we had been talking, and then we had connected for a couple other projects where you helped us out with sending up some Daisy products and stuff for some outdoor shows that we made, that we had. I was just telling Corey here before the show that the first time you sent up that whole display for the Daisy stuff, I think the BBs came in like little milk cartons, and I think there was 10,000 BBs, I think.
And I forget the number, but you're right. They used to be in milk cartons at one time.
By 2 o'clock on that first day of the show, that afternoon, we're having people run around town trying to find more BBs because we had shot them all up and had one more day of the show to go.
That's great. Yeah, that's one of those high-class problems, isn't it?
Something goes right. Kids just loved it. They flocked in there. It sucked them in like a magnet.
They do. I went to, in my years with Daisy, I went to a lot of outdoor events, and most of them were youth-oriented, and just without fail, shooting an air gun was always the most popular activity there. There were a lot of other fun things to learn how to do, but shooting an air gun was at the top of the list for most of those kids.
In your career, how long were you associated with Daisy?
Oh, I was with Daisy for 18 years, and then I've been continued on with the museum, which is a separate nonprofit corporation, for 8 years.
Very good. Tell us a little about your history with the company. We touched on it a little bit, but you were in like marketing and sales and stuff like that. Is that how you started?
Yeah, I started off in marketing, but marketing was mostly advertising, public relations, packaging. We went through a process of, things were changing when I joined the company. The internet was pretty new, so you know, there were challenges like that we didn't know anything about, internet and email, and that's how old I am. But we had to put together, digital files instead of the old, by the way, you may hear the siren in the background. We're very close to a fire station.
I hear that.
Sorry about that. I can't control that. But, so we had to put together digital files instead of the old scans of, transparencies of product shots and things like that. New catalogs and, everything was new. And we tackled it well, and I think we carried on the history of Daisy being a good promoter and a good advertiser.
Yes. As in your current position, what does a museum curator do?
I don't know what he doesn't do. You know? is the toilet stopped up today?
Yeah, there you go.
it's just basically overseeing the museum and being a good steward of the collection, developing new displays. And then in order to keep a museum open, you've really got two sources of revenue. You have donations and you have proceeds, profits from selling products. So we're constantly trying to develop new products that support the collector market, but we're also just a great tourism destination here in the little city of Rogers, Arkansas. We're right downtown, and we have a 25-foot BB gun, Daisy BB gun, leaning up against the building outside so you can take your picture. And when you come in, we have everything that Daisy sells. But we also have things like an 85th anniversary of the Red Ryder. Nobody else has that. We developed that. 50th anniversary of the Model 880. A 40th anniversary of the gun used in the movie A Christmas Story. So we try to keep things interesting. of course, we have caps and T-shirts and all that kind of thing. But
right.
So curator means protecting the collection and, you know, keeping that under wraps, but also making it an interesting place that people want to visit and having something here for people when they come that they can take home and remember their visit by.
Like I said at the start, I think you got a dream job, man. That just that just sounds fun to me.
Well, when I joined Daisy, the then president said to me, by the way, you're going to build a museum. I said, I've never built a museum. He goes, no, but I know that you like antiques and you like old things, and I've visited your house, and I know you display things nicely. And he says, and you're already liking this history of this company. And so, you know, together we put together a museum.
That was a good CEO that he recognized that.
He was a good guy. I'll tell you, that's the thing I'm most thankful for. I've worked for three presidents, and they were all strong leaders with good ethics and, you know, very encouraging to work for.
When did the name Daisy first appear on the American landscape?
Okay, well, we have a very strange history, and if anybody wants to go to the daisymuseum.com website, they can read all the details. The Cliff's Notes version is, there was a man named Clarence Hamilton, and Hamilton was an inventor. If you get on, what is it, trademarks and patents, or patentsandtrademarks.gov, and search for Clarence J. Hamilton, you'll find things that he invented. He was a watchmaker. He was a tinkerer. He was always looking for a better way to make something. He looked at wooden windmills and decided that he could make a better one out of steel. And he did, and he founded the Plymouth Iron Windmill Company in Plymouth, Michigan in 1882. Every year for the next 6 years, their sales declined because the windmill weighed a ton. Kids today say literally. I mean, literally, it weighed a ton. I don't just mean a lot. And so they had trouble shipping it. They could only market in about a 100-mile radius. And Hamilton was tinkering around at his home. He made a little steel air gun because he'd seen wooden air guns locally made by a company called Markham Manufacturing. And they were a bucket maker and a barrel maker. And I think they just fooled around one day and made a little air gun out of a barrel stave. And so he saw that and he said, I can make a better one out of steel again. And so he did. He brought it in to the general manager who shot it, liked it, and turned to Clarence and said, boy, that's Daisy.
Which was common for that time.
Exactly. I tell kids today, we could be the awesome company or the radical sick company. You know, like, those are the sayings of today, but back then was, if you like something, it was a Daisy. So
I don't think it would have the same ring to it if it had totally awesome dude on the side. Totally awesome dude.
Well, history would have to tell us if that's
right.
True or not. But anyway, so the first guns were actually marked Plymouth Iron Windmill Company, Plymouth Mich patent applied for, and the word Daisy just was kind of the model name, but lots of details in between. But by 1895, they gave up on windmills. They were totally into the Daisy air gun. And it's a strange-looking little wire stock skeleton-looking gun. And by 1895, they changed the name to Daisy Manufacturing. And that's how history began for us.
I have seen a replica of the original gun with the wire stock. And, yeah, it does look – we would refer to that today as a skeletonized stock, but
right.
It was just basically a barrel and a wire stock on it. And
that's right. That's right.
I would like to see the real one sometime.
We have one. Yes, we do.
Very good.
There were a few early variations where a rivet replaced the screw and a reinforcement piece was added, but there's probably about maybe five or six generations of variations of that early gun, but we have them. And then you said you saw a reproduction. This museum We reproduced the original gun in 2008, so that'd be 120 years after it was first made.
Okay.
And it was quite the challenge. They were a handmade item. They were not mass-produced on an assembly line.
Nothing. In that era, nothing was. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Nothing was for another 40 years. So that's amazing. Yeah.
That is cool. Did you have a Daisy Air rifle when you were growing up, Joe?
I did. I'm kind of like the people who walk in here, and they'll be in here at 9 o'clock, I'm sure, that they come in and they're going, I bet you don't have my old gun. And you know, for everybody that comes in here, their old gun is the most important one in here. There's other cooler things, but they want to see their old gun. And I got my gun in 1957. I was 5 years old. My dad was a World War II veteran. He had lots of firearms. He loved shooting of all kinds. And so he got my brother and I BB guns at a very early age. And when I joined Daisy, that's the one thing my dad, I think when I left home, I think they sold my electric train and, you know, all sorts of cool things I wish I still had. But for some reason, he kept my Daisy gun. And when he was 85 years old, he re-presented it to me. And that was pretty special.
That's cool.
And again, I immediately went to the company and said, hey, wait a minute, when was this gun made? And we looked it up, which is something we do every day here. And it was made in 1955, so I was only 3 when it was made. I was 5 when I got it. So I started asking my dad. He's passed, but when he was living, he got it from a neighbor because the neighbor didn't think that his boy should have the BB gun anymore. So I got a hand-me-down first gun. It's a Model 80. Like I say, it was made in December of 55, but I got it for Christmas in 57. So.
Very nice. I started my boys out with their first BB guns about the same age, 5-6 years old. And the rule was we could go out in the backyard and shoot whatever targets we had until they were tired of doing it, which at that age meant about 20 minutes.
Right.
And the rule was we'll shoot until you're tired or until that muzzle is not where it's supposed to be, and I'll take the gun away from you.
Amen.
And my oldest boy was very serious, and we'd go out and shoot till he was tired and put the gun away, and everything was fine. My number two son, there's some days we didn't even get out of the house. Before I turned around, I said, nope, Isaac, give me the gun. You're not paying
good
attention where the muzzle is.
Yeah, you know, that's such a, and I talk to a lot of school kids in here, and I always go through safety rules first, and we talk about that muzzle control, keeping it pointed in the safe direction. Don't point at anything you don't want to shoot. You can say it a dozen ways, but you know, if you do that, the other safety rules kind of take care of themselves, because if you don't have the gun pointed at something that you shouldn't shoot, you'll never shoot it.
Right.
You know, yes, keep your finger off the trigger. Yes, keep it on safety till you're ready to shoot. But that first one is just paramount, isn't it?
It is. It is. My brother, when we were growing up, he had the pump model Daisy, the Model 25.
Right. Oh, great gun.
And I was so jealous of that because he could fire, he could get off a second shot faster than I could.
Yeah. Yep, he sure could. He just keep pumping, couldn't he?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
And one of the things to me that seemed odd the first time I ever saw it, but I understand now, but I think Daisy still holds the title of making the most accurate air gun in the world. And it's their competition gun, the 499B. And that's for a lot of beginner programs, like 4-H and stuff. Does that still hold?
Yes, and it kind of goes hand in hand with the fact that, oh gosh, I think it was in 1948 when Daisy was still up in Michigan, they were invited to the Detroit Public Schools to teach gun safety and start a shooting education program in the public schools. My, we've come a long way today.
Yes.
Things have changed. But they did that program, and then they hired a local, I think it's a baseball coach, and they said, "You're not doing anything this summer. We know how to teach kids to shoot, but you can write a curriculum. You know how to write, you know, a lesson plan right. for each week." So he wrote a 10-lesson shooting education plan that's still used by most most organizations that shoot teach shooting safety and shooting marksmanship. Use that little booklet. And then you're right, Daisy developed the 99, and then that became the 499 gun. And it's just it's a low-velocity gun, but it shoots a BB more accurately than any other gun in the world. Yeah, it's an amazing gun.
That always amazed me. I mean, the range, if I remember right, officially the range was 5 meters or something like that.
That's right.
It's not very far, but you still have to practice all the mechanics to get that BB to go where you want, and that's just phenomenal.
Yeah. And competitively, they shoot in standing, sitting, kneeling, and prone positions, and then they'll progress on to 10 meter. Kids 8 to 12 can, or I'm sorry, 8 to 15 can shoot in that program.
Okay.
And after that, they get into 10 meter air rifle, which is a pellet rifle. And there are some rules and regulations about what that gun can and cannot be. And then they'll shoot at 10 meters, and they shoot three positions there. So they don't do the sitting. But
we need to step away and take a commercial break, Joe, but I hope you can stay with us. I got a few more questions for you.
I'm right here.
Okay. Stand by, folks. Stay with us. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Joe Murfin this morning, the current curator of the Daisy Airgun Museum in Rogers, Arkansas. When we left there, Joe, we were talking about a couple of the guns that you made, and you mentioned one earlier that is probably the most famous gun for people that are really not into air guns, and that's the Red Ryder. How did that model come to be?
Well, in the late 30s, Daisy had been naming air guns, BB guns, after young men who could shoot a gun, ride a horse, and be in serial movies every Saturday morning at your movie theater. And they really, I hate to even just call him a promoter, he was a genius in the licensing field, by the name of Steven Schlesinger, approached Daisy along with Western artist Fred Harmon. And they said, you know, if you keep doing that, somebody will do something that will someday, which will reflect poorly on your company. So why don't we name a gun after our fictitious character, Red Ryder? And Schlesinger owned the rights to that name and that logo. Well, the logo was soon created. And then Harmon was the illustrator of the Red Ryder comics, which became books, which became movies. And that all happened between 1938 and 1940. The gun came out in 1940. We actually have in our museum the first Red Ryder that it's a prototypical model, and it was given to Fred Harmon by two Daisy executives on April 2nd, 1940. And they wrote on it, "One only, limited edition, certified," and stuck a gold star on it and then signed it. So they were friends. It was kind of a comical thing that they did together, but they wanted Fred to have the first gun. And that hung out in his art studio in Pagosa Springs until his son passed away. And then his son's wife, his daughter-in-law, saw fit to donate it to our museum. So
very nice.
It's just a gun. You know, it's got a great history. It's got a traditional look to it. And now it's been made for so many generations that it's something that people can hand down. If you had a Red Ryder, your child will have a Red Ryder.
Yes. What else can people see at the museum?
Oh, my goodness.
You know, we only got about two minutes left, Joe, so rattle them all off.
Rattle them all off. Okay, well, we have old furniture from Plymouth that we moved down here because Daisy came here in 1958. We have that story. We have the gun that the first salesman, Charlie Bennett, took around the world in 1907. And he wrote on there, "This is the gun I took around the world," and signed it. We have lots of artwork, lots of photographs, several nice oil paintings, including an original Fred Harmon oil painting. We have a World War II display, which talks about how companies couldn't get steel during World War II. So you couldn't make a BB gun, but you could make a wooden toy gun, and you could get contracts and stamp out parts. And we have about a 3-foot by 4-foot display of all the parts Daisy made for the war effort during those years. There's a really strange story about two golf balls on the moon that were hit by Alan Shepard.
Right.
And yeah, he was the second person to be on the moon. And 1971, he was on the Apollo 14 mission, and he hit two golf balls on the moon. And we have the story about how those guns have Daisy stamped on one side of them. And
really?
To read that, I think you can probably find the story online, but
I bet
it's more fun to come in and see it in the museum. We have a BB display, and then we have a great display about instinct shooting, where you can learn to instinctively shoot a target with a BB gun that has no sights on it. And once you do that, you become a better wing shooter.
Yes.
Oh, and then let's see. We have a story about shooting education. Of course, there's a lot of small stories about special people who made a great contribution to the company. We have one case full of firearms made by Daisy. Daisy made a caseless ammo gun. They made several 22s.
Yeah, the VL series.
The VL series, you know about Van Langenhoven, yes.
Yes.
And,
I have a couple of the bolt-action 22 long rifles, but
yes,
the VL, I've never gotten into those because you can't find the ammo for them.
the ammo is more valuable than the gun.
Exactly.
we have the 50 millionth gun that Daisy ever made, and that was made in 1960, so we've made a lot of them since then. We have a 50 caliber rifle that was sold out of our R&D department to Navy SEALs. That's a whole nother story.
That one I want to see.
And then we have, like I say, and then we have the obligatory, you exit through the gift shop where you can pick up special guns, books, coffee mugs, caps, coasters, gun cases, patches, pins, you name it.
Do you need to make a reservation to come in and see all this?
Not at all. We're open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. We're closed a few holidays. We'll be closed on Monday, but this week for the Memorial Day weekend. But other than that, we're open pretty much year-round. And we do ask if you're bringing a tour of 20, 25 people that you make a reservation. But
Jim,
just to walk in and enjoy it anytime.
We've run out of time. Thank you, sir.
Good to talk to you, Rick.
Have a great weekend.
Take care. You too, sir.
Right.
Bye-bye.